Yeah, it's a very different world, isn't it? We're all doing fine, thank you. My wife Kerry and I are here in Galway. Our two sons are back in Australia, as are my parents, Kerry's parents, and our extended family. So it's a little bit tricky trying to keep everyone or keep in touch with everybody. And it's probably been a bit frustrating, I've got to say, just watching from afar how slow Australia's been to respond to this. But we've been keeping them up to date with what our Taoiseach's been saying here and the way Ireland are dealing with things. And I think our family, certainly the Friend family, are probably more ahead of the curve than other people back in Australia.
It's a very odd situation for everybody. In all the scenarios that you've gone through in rugby, have you ever come across a situation where the season just, or did you even think of a situation where the season would just stop dead?
No, I've never experienced, I don't think any of us have experienced that. And I think what you're seeing around the world at the moment with just the way, you know, sport has basically collapsed, no one ever envisaged this. I did see something where Bill Gates back in 2015 did a TED talk on it. So he probably had the vision to see it, but maybe nobody listened to him at the time. But certainly unprecedented times as we keep hearing, and it is. And we will come out of the end of it. And hopefully that's sooner rather than later.
Just give me an idea. How did Connacht react to this? When did you, I suppose we all became aware a number of weeks ago that this was probably approaching us, but when the actual decision was made in Connacht, what did you have to do to keep that organization together, but obviously to get people out of the working environment?
Well, yeah, it all happened very, very quickly. And it was Friday, tomorrow, 3 weeks ago, where it was the 20th of I think it was the 20th of March from memory, around that period anyway. We got a call from the RFU saying that given the information from the World Health Organization, all forms of contact training needed to stop. We had lengthy teleconference calls with the RFU and the other provincial coaches. We all expressed our concerns around what the news we were hearing. And the decision was made reasonably quickly that in the best interest of everybody, of the staff and everybody involved in rugby around Ireland, that things cease until we got more information. So I applaud the RFU for the management of that. It happened reasonably swiftly. So that next week, there was a lot of conversations going on around, you know, what does the form of the season now look like? How are we going to deal with this? It did take a lot of teleconferencing and phone hookups and Zoom calls and all the rest of it, which is all new to most of us. But that became very quickly the new way of doing things. And at the end of that next week, the week that we should have been playing the Scarlets, there was a pretty good plan in place about how we were going to proceed over the next 8 weeks. So from a Connacht point of view, we moved into gear pretty quickly. I think one of the good things that we've attempted to do as an organisation, and I think Connacht's always done as an organisation, they're quite proactive with things, and there's, you know, a lot of people have got autonomy and people can move pretty quickly, and I think we've seen that with our staff and our players. There's been a lot of positivity around how quickly we've adapted to things, and we got up and running pretty quickly after we got the news as to what the next 8 weeks was going to look like.
How have the players set up? Because they're used to having very much a routine. They train, they do indoor training, obviously in the gym, then they're on out doing their sessions, they've got fitness sessions, and they're big, fit young men who are used to running around on rugby fields, and now they're cooped up in houses and stuff. So what are they doing? How are you managing that?
We actually set about and saying, well, listen, when all this finishes, what do we want to look like? How do we want to come out of this? And I think, you know, having a purpose around that is really, really important. So the first thing we said, everyone, just pause what we currently see as our current existence, because it's no longer our current existence. Our current existence is about to cease. So when you then accept that what you're used to doing is no longer going to become your norm, then take a more broader approach back and say, well, how do we want to come out of this? And there were three things that we identified really quickly. First thing is we're all in very different situations. So we've all got very different family situations. Some have partners, some have partners and kids, some live with elderly parents, some live in group houses, some live in different parts of the world, their home is in different parts of the world. So the first thing we said was make sure you do everything in your power to be comfortable and be where you are most safe and your family is most safe. And however that looks, make sure you zone in on that. So that was the first thing we said to all staff and to all players. Second thing we said is let's use this period to develop ourselves. So there's ample time now to do some of the things that you said you never could do. So whether that was a rehab session or a prehab session or studying an opposition or doing some study or doing some CPD, spend this time and give yourself the opportunity to do that. And the third thing was, let's stay connected. So I think one of the beauties of a rugby program and any sport team is the connectivity with that, where we are all individuals, but at the same time, we're all one. We're one team, and whether you're a staff or whether you're a player, we have this connection, which we wanted to make sure we didn't lose. So there's been a lot of phone calls and texting and teleconferencing, and different forms of connection have been happening over the course of the last period. In terms of the players' training, one of the things that happened really swiftly and really efficiently was, it came from our athletic performance group, Dave Howarth, Johnny O'Connor and Barry O'Brien, really quickly went around to all the players and said, who needs gym equipment? Messages came back in to say, I've got this, and I need that. And then they divvied up the Connacht gym equipment. That was on the Thursday, 2 weeks ago. Martin Joyce drove up from Limerick. We had a pretty strict policy around who could be touching the gear, who couldn't be touching the gear. And then a list was made of what players needed what gear. And that gear was then driven by Martin Joyce out to Joycey, out to the respective players' houses and dropped off. So virtually overnight, all of our players had home gyms set up where we then sent out programs, and the players could then be working in their own homes on those programs. So that's been one of the things that was initiated really quickly and really early. And so the boys, whilst their norm has been upset a little bit, they are still able to train. And they are following programs and keeping as fit as they can be.
That's the physical side of this. I suppose there's a mental side of it as well, and that applies to everybody. That's anybody listening to this broadcast. Everybody has to keep focused on whatever gets them through this. But have you made any specifics on that side?
Well, that's the part of the connection. So, I think one of the things that we're all used to in what we'll call normal society prior to this period was just that daily connection with people. It's probably well recorded that at Connacht every morning, we have an hour check-in period, and in that check-in period, there's a lot of handshakes going on and just checking in with the people, and how'd you go last night, and did you think about the conversation we had yesterday, and whatever that is. But you're checking in with people the whole time, and it's very, very personable. And as soon as you take that away, that has an adverse effect, or can have an adverse effect, on someone's well-being. So what we're attempting to do in this new environment of social distancing is still keeping that connectivity, obviously without the handshake and without the social interaction or the personal interaction there, or the physical interaction, I should say, but still doing that over the various forms of teleconferencing, Skype, texting, whatever. Our leadership group have been great with that. So we have 8 leaders. Really quickly, they separated the group into the group of players, that is, into 8 groups. So each leader had 5 or 6 players to be looking after. Each week, those leaders get in touch with those players and just check in, as do I with all the players and the staff, as do other staff members. And we are also now setting up some professional development stuff or some CPD stuff around things like coping mechanisms around simple things like how to schedule your week. Because as you said at the front end of this, William, we traditionally in a rugby program, we give them everything. So they turn up on a Monday morning and there's a schedule there that says you're going to go to this, into this, into this, into this, into this, and then they go home. And the next day they come back and we're going to do this, 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 and this.
So is that a bit of a challenge? And I suppose because there is a concern maybe that younger people haven't taken this on board as much as people of my generation, and I suppose they're very, very fit people, so it's they've had to change their mindset on this a lot, and maybe some of them might have had to grow up a little bit quicker than they might have been.
Yeah, listen, I think some of the early messaging that came out was that this was only going to affect the elderly. Anyone over the age of 65, beware. Anybody else, you're probably going to be okay. And I think that messaging gave the younger generation an opportunity to say, well, it's not really affecting me. But straight away what we saw was probably the selfish nature of human beings. If it's not going to affect us, well, I'm not really going to worry about it because it's not really me that is going to get affected with this or infected with this. So I think what was then more powerful was when you started to see some younger people actually who'd contracted the COVID-19 virus and you know, were either severely suffering or losing their lives, sadly. And all of a sudden people started to wake up to that. And I think the other thing that people started to wake up to was you may not be affected, but you can certainly affect a lot of people if you choose to be selfish with this. And I think, you know, the humane part of most people then looks at it and says, I have a responsibility here and I need to do something for the rest of the community here to be smart. And I think one of the best things I heard was act as though you have already contracted the disease and therefore you'll protect others by the mere fact that you're trying to not spread that disease. And I think, you know, if people follow that messaging, we're going to be pretty safe as a group.
We're only possibly into the start of this, Andy, but have you given any thought to where going forward rugby might be and when we are likely to possibly see some live rugby again? There's live sport has ceased everywhere in all forms, it would seem.
Yeah, it has. And I can only share with you what, you know, the conversations we've had with the IRFU, which is now obviously out there in the public, where we've been told we'll be in this current situation away from our respective workplaces until Monday the 18th of May at the very earliest. As that date draws nearer, then we'll have a better indication as to whether we are going to get back to work on the 18th of May. Where everyone's keen to be playing rugby and keen to be back out there, but what we've also got to be very conscious of is, you know, that'll be 9 weeks since we last trained if we get through to the 18th of May. And in that time, whilst we'll have players doing conditioning work at home and they may be doing their weights at home and as best they can be doing their running, the one thing they haven't been able to do, most of them, is contact. And the one thing that actually separates rugby from most other sports is the level of contact. And you have to condition the body in a certain way to allow your body to accept the levels of contact these young men take. So we've been on conference calls again this morning and throughout the course of the week as to how that period's going to look when we come back. IRFU have said to us they'd like us to have a 6-week period to rebuild the bodies of these young men and then potentially, if we can, look to try and finish a season in July and August. Whether that will happen is anybody's guess at this point in time, but that's the current plan. We'd love to get back out there, but we also need to be conscious of not putting the players out there too early as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I suppose it does give you something to aim towards and it keeps the motivation level that there is an end coming to this, but obviously we're still learning more about this virus and its effects as we take step by step.
Yeah, correct. We are.
Good mate of yours, Eddie Jones, has just signed up to stay with England until after the 2023 World Cup. That was probably always going to happen, wasn't it, Andy?
I read that this morning, William. I know talking to Eddie prior to the World Cup, he didn't know where his future lay and he didn't know whether that was what he wanted to do or where he was going to be. But I certainly think post the World Cup and how successful they were there, they didn't win it, but, you know, got pretty close and how well they've done with the Six Nations, you know, would make good sense. I think he's got the boys on track and I think he's doing a great job and it would make sense to take him through to 2023. So I was really pleased when I read that.
Well, he certainly he'll keep the media interested anyway. He's never short of an opinion or two.
No, you know what he's thinking, that's for sure.
Yeah, no comment is not in his vocabulary. Just looking, I mean, news out, rugby in America has filed for a Chapter 11, I think it's called bankruptcy issue, which is maybe not a surprise. But up here, a lot of attention on very difficult times in Australian rugby. Financially, they seem to have gone into a lockdown to try to get through this. But yet they're a successful team at international level, but the structure does seem rather, it's struggling a bit. Maybe you could give us an insight into that, because I think it catches people out. They just assume that all of the Southern Hemisphere is just floating along quite happily.
Yeah, Australian rugby or Rugby Australia is far from being floating along quite happily for some time now. And I think, you know, sadly what we're seeing there at the moment with the 75% staff cuts and player wages reductions as well as staff reductions, it's just an indication as to how much the game is in trouble back there. You know, I remember clearly when I was first coming through as a young coach, rugby was the flavour of the month. You know, everyone wanted to be involved with rugby. But I think on reflection, you can look back at it and say what they didn't protect was the grassroots. All the money seemed to go into the pro game, and you know, we built the pyramid from the top down, and that doesn't work. So you need to have the foundation, which I do applaud the RFU and the way the grassroots game is funded here and supported here. That hasn't happened in Australia. And at the same time in Australia, we've also had this massive vehicle of AFL, more so than rugby league, but this massive vehicle of AFL has basically swamped the sporting landscape and taken up all the young athletes that potentially used to come across and play rugby. So, yeah, Australia, far from being in a rosy position up until this crisis, and now we've got the COVID crisis, you know, it would not surprise me if we see more reductions in what actually, you know, what we used to know as Rugby Australia.
And do you think this is a situation where World Rugby is going to have to maybe look to find some financial structures for unions that are in trouble, that there's going to have to be a more even spread of the money, simply to keep the game at the top level running? I understand what you're saying about grassroots, but I suppose their focus would be on, they need the top international teams to be thriving.
Yeah, and they will. You know, I'm sure Australian rugby, or you know, the Wallabies, won't be lost to the international landscape. That just can't happen. It may be a quieter beast for a few years yet, but I was only talking to someone about it today back home in Australia, and it's not too dissimilar to the bushfire. You know, the bushfires go through and there's massive devastation, and basically a whole landscape is wiped out. But about a month later, and a month in a sporting context, make that a year, so 10 months later, 10 years later, you know, things are flowering and things are blooming, and the bush bounces back. And that's what I reckon is going to happen with Australian rugby. I know the last couple of CEOs Australian rugby have had, they've worked really hard to change the constitution of rugby, the way it was set up back when it was all established, and they weren't able to do it. So this could be a great opportunity now to say, right, I scrap the whole thing. Let's start again. And let's start again where there is a centralised model, because I think what we're seeing, if they're smart enough to look at, again, the RFU model, there's a lot of people can throw criticism at having a centralised model. But here we are in this crisis situation, and one of the first things the RFU said was, we want to make sure nobody loses their jobs, and we want to make sure that we get through this collectively. And they've been able to do that because they hold the strings from the centralized viewpoint, which is really, really powerful. So I think, you know, I'm always try and see the bright side of things. And I think coming out of this Australian situation, there's going to be some pain. There already is some pain. There has been some pain, but this is probably the lowest it's ever going to get. And then out of that, it can be, with the right people in place, it can be rebuilt and become something really, really strong and powerful again. We're not getting too trigger happy with those.
Andy, just to bring it back finally before I let you go, how do you feel we are? Where, as you're looking at it from where you're sitting, we're obviously in this completely new environment, the new normal. Do you think this is going to change maybe the way people look at sport when it comes back? Will it come back differently? I'm seeing some suggestions that everything will just go back to normal eventually and nothing will have changed. But you're looking at it from the inside looking out in a professional sports capacity. What do you feel we might see? Do you sense, do you get an appreciation that maybe the contract that exists between fans and clubs and players and clubs, that there might be some changes here, that this, as with the Australian Rugby Union, is an opportunity maybe to change the narrative a little bit?
Yeah, I do. And I'm not sure what that's going to look like, William, but you know, I certainly look at this period that we're currently going through and just saying, what a brilliant opportunity to reset. And have a look and actually have some reflection time. And we talked about that as a staff this morning on a video conferencing call. Our lives, our currency in rugby, in professional sport, is be busy. And we are so busy being busy, but we don't necessarily give ourselves time to stop and to think and to reflect. And in life normal, we are busy and we get a chance to race off to a footy game and go and watch that. Yet now that we're missing that, we don't have it there. I think when we come back, as a staff and as a pro rugby program, I think we're going to be far more proactive in giving ourselves time to be better and make sure our currency is not being busy, but our currency is being effective and having impact. And I think as a population watching it, you'll probably appreciate a little bit more the opportunity you get to go and watch that, as long as the game's still being played well and maybe these laws will assist it in being well. So I think it's a great opportunity for all of us just to stop and reflect and look at how we've been living and how we've been doing things and to take this time now to come back and be better. And I honestly think we will be better if we're actually truly honest with where we've been and where we currently see ourselves. I think the relationships between ourselves as pro staff and as players, our relationships between a pro footy team and the community, our relationships within the community. You're already seeing it. Like, my wife and I go for a walk every morning, and people actually, as the longer this virus, this lockdown goes on and these restrictions go on, the more friendly people seem to be. That's what I'm seeing. And people, you know, they'll see you coming from 50 metres away and they'll step 2 metres off to the side and they'll say good morning as you walk past. Whereas previously, people just walk past, you've got their head down and they're busy. You know, they're in a hurry to be busy. And so we probably didn't take the time to stop and identify what was going on around us. So it's a long-winded answer to your question, William, but I do see it changing. I do see, and I think for the good, I do see if people take this time and use it correctly, we'll be better versions of ourselves when we come out of this.